This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
And shamingly, we don't allow the king to do it. Because the king has no right to compromise on his honor. He's not permitted to say that you don't have to do this, you don't have to bow before me, or you don't have to do whatever the halacha requires you to do in the king's presence. The king has to ensure that is in fact done. Even if a relative dies, he doesn't leave his palace. And when people come to comfort him, they sit on the ground and he sits on a chair. When he came into the Beit HaMikdash, if he was a descendant of David, he used to sit even in the Beit HaMikdash. If he wasn't a descendant of David, he wouldn't be permitted to sit. HaMelech mistaper b'chol yom, he has a haircut every morning. The hairdresser calls on him every morning. I wouldn't think one would find this in halacha. It sounds like the protocol of Buckingham Palace. It's in halacha too. Our king, every morning, beginning and probably right off the davening, you can be sure the hairdresser would call at the king's rooms and would give him a haircut. When the takin atzmo, and he fixes himself up, he does himself up. Umit noeb b'malbushim noim u'mepuorim, and he makes himself attractive with the most glorious clothing. Shenema, as it says, melech b'yof yoitechezenu enecho, a king must be seen in his full beauty. B'yoshev al tisei malchusei b'paltuim shelo, and then he sits on his throne in his palace. Umeisim keser b'roisho, and we run up on the English, he has his crown on his head. Whenever he sits in his palace and receives people, he's wearing his crown. And this crown was mighty heavy, by the way. And the people can then call on him when he wants to. The oimdin lefanov, they never sit in his presence, they stand. Umishtachavim alto, and they bow down right to the ground. Afilu novi oimid mitne amelech mishtachavim alto. Even if a prophet stands before us to bow down. But the Kohen Gadol only comes if he wants to. The status of the Kohen Gadol is one up of the king in many ways. He can't be summoned to the king. The Kohen Gadol comes when he wants to. He's the only person who can't be summoned. And when the Kohen Gadol comes in, the king stands up. Nevertheless, it's a mitzvah even for the Kohen Gadol to honor the king, and to ask the king please to sit down, and for him to stand. It's an interesting concept. The Kohen Gadol sits and the king stands. But the Derech Eretz, the correct thing to do, is for the Kohen Gadol, when the king stands up, to say to the king, please, your majesty, be seated, and he remains standing. That's the correct thing to do. That's why I always say, you know, with the whole business of whether a man should go through a door first or a lady should go through a door first, even if al pi halacha a man should go through a door first, there's nothing wrong with a man standing aside and inviting his wife to go through the door first. That certainly is not out of place. As long as she doesn't barge through the door first, as if that's her right. The next part of the Rambam, I'll read to you a little bit further on. Just skipping a little piece, the Rambam then comes on to talk about how with all this the king has to be extremely modest, and he has to be sensitive, and he has to care about people, and even the smallest of small people, he must be sensitive to the self-dignity and self-respect of the smallest of small people. And he should bear their problems and be patient, like a shepherd, etc. In other words, we have a Bria called a king. We have this creature called a Melech. With all the pomp and ceremony that we saw on the television the other day, and more, with all the covers, with all the respect and the dignity and the thrones and the crowns and the whole business, we've got that in Yiddishkeit. There is such a thing as a Melech. That's number one. And basically what the Melech is an individual who has power. He's not just a figurehead, he has power, he's the ultimate government authority. And at the same time, we keep him isolated. We lock him up in his palace a little bit. We keep him away from day-to-day contact with the people. Because no matter how great a person is, and this melech has to be a great person too, so he's a great authority, he's the melech, he's the government authority, and he's also a great human being, he's a mensch. But despite all that, familiarity does breed, if not contempt, at least familiarity. And nobody is allowed to be familiar with it. It's necessary in order to preserve the special romantic something about Malchus. Whatever it is, maybe we will have understood a little more about it later on. But whatever it is that goes together with Malchus, with royalty, part of its preservation requires isolation. He's got to be locked up in an ivory tower. You can't see him when he's doing gym. And you can't see him when he's patting his head. And you can't see him when he's washing himself. The only time you can see him is when he sits with his crown and his beautiful velvet clothes and robes and the whole story sitting on his throne. That's when you can see the melech. At any other time you can't see him. So you say, but who are you fooling? Everybody knows he's a human being and he does all the other things that human beings do, and he does have a haircut and he does go to the bathroom and he does it. That doesn't matter, but we will see him doing that. We'll spoil some of the majesty. And that's what the British have that most other countries don't have, except those that have kings. Not the same when you've got a president. He has all the power, yes, but that he doesn't have. He's just an ordinary person like them. Whereas the melech, the type of melech we're talking about, yes, we know he's an ordinary person, but our image of him is of something ideal, something romantic, something a notch above the normal humdrum type of life that everybody else lives. That's the melech. What about non-Jewish kings? There is a halacha. Firstly, al hamalachim, when you see a king, the Shulchan Aruch passes in Arachayim Siman Resh Kaf Dalet, Omer Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Hayolom Shecholak Mikvoido Liyreil. There's a bracha to say when you see a king. He blessed God who gave of his honor to those who fear him. The al malchayoy bechelovim and on non-Jewish kings, Omer Baruch Shenotan Mikvoido Lebos Obedo. There's also a bracha to say when you see a non-Jewish king. He said, Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Hayolom, Shenotan Mikvoido Lebos Obedo, who gave of his honor to human beings. So number one, we see that not only does Halacha recognize the concept of a Melech, of a Jewish king, but Halacha even recognizes the concept of a non-Jewish king, and requires a bracha to be said. So there's something special about the experience of encountering Malchus. Something worthy of a bracha. Already we see that. And the next thing, mitzvah lihishtadel livois melochim. And in some versions of the Shulchan Aruch it's been, the next couple of words have been censored, but in most versions of Shulchan Aruch it reads, mitzvah lihishtadel livois melochim. It's a mitzvah to make an effort to see kings, afilu malchei ha'akum, even non-Jewish kings. And that comes from a Gemara in Brachos Daf Nunches. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Mishnah Berurah Paskim, based on the other Poskim, that it's even permitted for a Kohen to be metame himself, which comes from a Rambam, he can even be metame himself, tumah derabbanan. Rabbinical tumah, he can't tumah d'oraisa, he can't be metaneh. But tumah d'rabbanan, he can go into a situation, for example, where there's a sofek, we're not sure that there's a grave. There's a part of the town where there might or might not be graves. I mean, d'rabbanan, a kohen isn't allowed to walk over there. But if that's the way he needs to go in order to see the king, he's allowed to go right through that, he's allowed to be metaneh himself, d'rabbanan, a kohen can in order to see a king. And furthermore, says the Shulchan Aruch, if you've seen the king once, you don't need to be in the battle Torah, you don't have to stop learning to go and see the king a second time. Mashma, that implies, first of all, that for the first time you're actually in the battle Torah. Even if you're learning, you've got to stop learning to go and see the king. And even if you have seen the king already, in Lo Shabo Bechal Yoser Rechobot Godel Yoser, if the king the second time is coming with much greater pomp and ceremony than he was when you saw him last time, then you have to be Mevatel Torah, you even stop learning to go and see him the second time, just because it's going to be a more magnificent presentation. This is all very strange halachas. It just doesn't seem to be like the Torah that we normally know and understand. That you've got to stop learning in order to see, and it's not because of honor to the king. It's not just to give kovod to the king, because it doesn't say it's a mitzvah to be seen when the king goes past. It's not kovod. And if it was kovod, you would have to do it every time, even if you've had it once already. It's not a mitzvah of kovod. And it says mitzvah lishtatel liros, you should try and see. And if you're standing there by the crowds and you're one of the million people standing along the road, and you can't see because there's somebody tall standing in front of you, mitzvah lishtadel, you've got to try, you've got to jump up, you've got to bring a chair or a box to stand on, or get somebody to lift you up. It's not good enough just to be present. You've got to see, mitzvah lishtadel liros melachim, you've got to go out of your way to see kings. Unbelievable. Why? And I think the answer lies in the bracha that we make over kings, Jewish and non-Jewish kings. Let's take the bracha of non-Jewish kings, because that's primarily what we're concerned with at the moment. Baruch shenotan michvoidoy lebosso v'dom. We bless God who has given of His honor to humanity. That means that the majesty one sees surrounding royalty is ka'en shechina. It's something of the majesty that surrounds the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That's what it means. That it's not just a Hollywood show. That it's not just pomp and ceremony. There is a concept called majesty. There is an atmosphere called majesty. And that atmosphere has its makor, it has its root at the Kisei HaKovod. It's an atmosphere designed and created by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Ribbono Shel Olam gives part of that to human kings, Jews and Gentiles. And that's why it's a mitzvah to see it. Because there's something of Shechinah there. There's something real there. There's something of God's presence. And that's why we say that bracha, Baruch Shenosan Michvedo Elabos Avadon. And that's why you can even be Mevatel Torah for it. Because you're not just going to do a mitzvah or something. Torah, the whole idea of Torah is to get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What closer can you get than for a moment actually experience majesty? At least see what majesty is. The Gemara says in Brachos that the reason that you must go and see, make a special effort to see non-Jewish kings too, is Sheim Yiske, if you'll be fortunate enough, Yadchin Bein Malchus Akum L'Malchei Yisroel. You'll sense the difference of the kovod and the majesty that a non-Jewish king receives compared to a Jewish king. In other words, you should know, says the Gemara, that all that majesty and all that pomp and ceremony that you saw on Wednesday is nothing like the show that's going to be put on when the Mashiach comes. We'll put even the British to shame. Don't worry about that. Nothing like it. Like the kovod and the majesty that Malchei Yisrael will have. And one needs to see the majesty that the Goyim have so as to appreciate the full degree of majesty that the Melech HaMashiach will ultimately have. And I have a little private belief, I have no basis for it, but I have a private belief that the throne of England will last until Mashiach comes. All the others might disappear, but the Ribbono Shel Olam will keep one, just so that we should know what Malchus is. And he'll keep the most pompous of them, which is undoubtedly the British one. So we see that there is such a concept as a melech, and even as Malchei Akum. And more than that, we see that the pomp and ceremony that surrounds the malchus is in itself something that halacha attaches tremendous importance to, and requires that every Jew make an effort to expose himself to it to be able to see it. It would be interesting, Shilas, to know whether we're yotze with television or not, or whether one has to actually see it at first hand. Also Shilas in brachas, whether one could say the bracha seeing all this on television. And in fact, I'll bring you a Gemara which seems to suggest that maybe one could have said a bracha even on television. Rav Sheshet, this is the Gemara in Brachas Tafnat Nunches, Amud Aleph. Rav Sheshet Sagi Noir Havu. Rav Sheshet was a blind man. Havu Ta'azli Kuli Alme Likibuli Api Malka. The whole world, that means all the people, the whole community, was going to line the streets to see the king. And Kam Ozil Bahadayu, and Rav Sheshet went with him to stand by the street to see the king go past. Ashkechei Hawe Tzeduki. So there was the Apikonis who was standing there too. Omele Chatzi Lenara Tagli Liyad. I understand, said the Tzeduki, said the Apikonis, why you take jugs down to the water? But why take broken pieces of pottery down to the water? In other words, what are you here for? What can you see? You're blind. Omar le toch hazi de yodana tfemina. Says Rav Sheshet, you'll see without my eyes. I'll be able to see more than you. Cholap gunda kamaisa. The first carriage came past with the horses and everything that went with them. I think that was the queen mother. Kiko apsha, as it passed, Omar le hao tzeduki, so the apikoda said to Rav Sheshet, at the mountain, the king is here. Omele Rav Sheshet, loy kaati, says Rav Sheshet, that's not the king. Cholap gunda tinyana. The next one went along. To get to that word. Kika amshra, as it passed, omele hao tzeduki, hashta kaati malka. So the Apikur says, now the king's getting past me. Can you imagine the cheering and the roaring? Omele Rav Sheshet, loy kaati malka. Rav Sheshet says, no, I can sense that's not the king. The third one came, Kiko Shak. But there was no sound when it rode past, it was quiet. On the Rav Sheshet, Badai Hashka Ati Malka. So Rav Sheshet, that's the king going past. The Gemara brings Psukim and so on, but what we see is that Rav Sheshet was confident that whatever there is to see of Malchus, you don't need eyes for. It's an atmosphere, it's a presence, it's something you can experience and pick up. And he in fact said the Brook. And we passed him from here that even a blind man who's present with the king who sees, or in the position where he could see the king, also has to say the Brook. That's how we passed him. Certainly, he became blind later on in life. If he was blind from birth, he should say the Brook without shame or malice. He should say the Brook without God's name. But again, we see from here the tremendous impact that exposure to royalty has. There's something there that Rav Sheshet found it necessary to leave his base of Medrash, to go and stand along the crowds of the streets with who knows who, all of the masses of ordinary people. Although he's blind, just as which were more tumultuous in fact. There we see something of what's involved in Malchus. What is Malchus? What is a king? Well, before that, let me also just give you a bit of an example of the extent to which one has to show honor to kings. When Yaakov was very ill, he was down in Mitzrayim already, and he was about to die. A message was sent to Yosef, who was then the prime minister of Mitzrayim, saying that his father was ill, and Yosef came to visit his father by Agade li Yaakov, and it was told to Yaakov by Yonah, saying, Hinei bincha Yosef bo elecha, your son Yosef is coming. And this poor old man who suffered so much and was weak and sick and about to die, he pulled himself together in those last moments of life, and he sat up. Asked Rashi, why all this thing, lie down, there's no reason to stand up or to sit up. Omar, he said, even though he's my son, Melechu, he is a king. Achalek loy kovod, I've got to honor him. Although I'm sick and I'm old and I'm about to die, and although he's my son, and although he's not a king of a Jewish nation, and he's not even the king, Paro is on top of him. He's underneath Paro. But still, there's something there of Malchus, he's a king in fact, and I've got to honor him. I'm going to pull myself together in these last moments of my life and sit up out of kovod to Malchus. Out of honor to the king. Mikan Shekholkin Kovid the Malchus. And it's from here that we learn that one has to honor royalty. One has to show Kovid to a king. What is the Melech? There are many, many Chazal on Malchus and on the Melech, and we can only look at a couple of leading points. One of them, the Medrash says in Vayigash, as Yehuda draws up to Yosef before they knew who Yosef was, when the brothers thought that Yosef was non-Jewish prime minister, Yehuda comes up to bargain with him and to deal with him about Binyamin. At that point, the Medrash quotes the pasuk, "Hinei hamalochim noyadu ovru yachdav." Behold, the kings have made a meeting. They've come together. Ovru yachdav, they're passing together. And the Medrash plays on the word ovru, which also means evra. They're angry with one another. "Hinei hamalochim." What does it mean? Behold, the king, says the Medrash, "They Yehuda the Yosef." Yehuda and Yosef. It is already strange. Yosef was a king, that we know. But Yehuda, he was the father of the future kings of Israel. But at that stage, was Yehuda a king? He might have been the chief brother of 10 brothers or 11 brothers, but king he wasn't. But the Medrash calls him a king. Zeh Yehuda v'Yosef. Obru Yachlov, what does it mean? They were angry with each other. Zeh Nismar Evro al Zeh, they were furious with each other. What does it mean when the pasuk goes on and says others observed and were amazed? Those are the brothers standing about. Everybody was afraid one for the other. And they were afraid and they went wild with fear. They trembled there. A trembling fear took over them. Elu Ashvotim, these are the brothers. Omru, they said, Malachim, Medainim, Eluim, Elu, Anamai Chatlanu. The kings are arguing with each other. What have we got to interfere? Yain the Melech, Medain the Melech. Oy Vavoy, when a king starts arguing with another king. In other words, there was tremendous fear when Yehuda drew up to Yosef and started challenging Yosef. Those who were observing trembled in absolute fear as to what the outcome of this meeting was going to be between two kings. So Yosef is a Melech that we can understand. He was in charge of a great number of people, but Yehuda had no kingdom. So what does it mean when the brothers saw in Yehuda one king standing up to another, and that theory supported by the Medrash? The Medrash tells us that's correct, the impression was true. Where's the Melech? So one thing we see for sure, that to be a Melech you don't need a kingdom. That the concept of Malchus, this royalty that we're talking about, doesn't require for it a kingdom. You notice there were many kings at the wedding who didn't have kingdoms. It doesn't seem to be much of a problem. What do you need? The first thing you need, we can learn very simply. We saw from the Rambam that an essential quality of the king, or of the royalty, is the cover, the honor we give them. It's essential for royalty that we're mechabed. If we don't show honor to the king, he can't function as a king. The whole thing is structured on this tremendous awe in which we hold the king. And we've got to place him in that position of awe, and we have to preserve him in that position of awe. Because if we spoil that, we have no king yet. We can't just remove him down to the lowest common denominator. There's also the Mishnah which says, anybody who chases after honor, honor runs away from him. Anybody who runs after honor, honor runs after him. And anybody who chases honor, honor runs away from him. Kovod is one of these strange things, and the Talmud Rav explains this beautifully. He says, for two reasons. He says, number one, you'll find in financial areas. If I come to you and I say, could you do me a favor? I need a sixpence. I need to put something in the parking meter. I have no money on me. Any civilized human being will take out a sixpence and give it to you. Doesn't bother me. But if you demand a sixpence, if I come up to a man and you say, hey, give me my sixpence, right now, he won't. When you demand something, nobody likes to give it. When you ask for an invitation, nobody wants to give an invitation. If you need something, it will be given, but not in a way of demanding, not in a way that it's your right. Nobody likes to give things to people when those people assume that it belongs to them. And it's the same with COVID. Nobody likes to honor somebody who takes honor as his right. And the other reason, says the Soul of the World, is that usually you'll find when a person demands honor, he usually demands just a little bit too much. He's not very accurate in his assessment of how much honor he really deserves. And when people demand a little bit more than they deserve, the givers become extremely critical. Extremely critical. A man is doing a good job of work and he asks for R100 a month of salary, pay him, it's fine. After a few weeks he asks for the R50 raise, you pay out. He wants another R50 raise, he's on R200 a month, you pay out. Then he says, he comes and he says, look, R5,000 a month or nothing. Then you start working up, okay, now tell me what you do when you come in the morning, and what do you do, and how do you spend your time, and how much are you making, and what are you contributing, and so on and so forth. All of a sudden we start analysing very critically, and we start criticising him. Why do you do it this way, and why do you come in at that 8:45 when you should be in at 8:30? And he says, but you never complained about these things last week. This is, now you want R5,000, now one has to feel that you deserve it. And it's like that with COVID as well. If a man starts demanding COVID, very critically as to whether he deserves it or not. And they usually find it difficult to find that people don't deserve COVID. Be that as it may, anybody who chases after honor, after COVID, COVID has a strange habit of disappearing. But anybody who runs away from COVID, anybody who doesn't want it, people tend to shower honor on people who don't need it and don't want it. Don't need it being the operative word. We're not talking about the guy who runs for all his worth from COVID, and you want to give him an idea, and he says, no, please, just leave it alone. And you want to ask him to sit up in the front, and he says, no, I'm happy here, and he's running for all his worth, and every few yards he's looking over his shoulder to make sure that the COVID's running after him. We're not talking about that human being. We're talking about a man who really doesn't need it, who really doesn't want the COVID. He has nothing to do. So if a king needs COVID, if a king needs honor, the first thing is he has to be a boreach min ha-COVID. He has to be a human being who has no arrogance about him. He has to be a human being who puts in a lot of effort in trying to get away from honor, to get away from COVID. The first qualification we need for a melech. The next qualification we need for a melech is learned from a tiny little medrash where the medrash tells us also in Bereishis. Remember, it was after 2 years at the beginning of Mikes, and Yosef was in jail all that time. Ufaro cholem. Paro dreams a dream. Asks the medrash, what is this? Ufaro cholem. Pharaoh had a dream. The chol abriyat einan cholem mitman. I ask you, says the medrash, is Pharaoh the first one who ever had a dream that we kind of stretch the thing? Pharaoh had a dream. So what? Elo cholem shel melech shel kol ha'olam kulo. When a king dreams, it's for the whole world. That's the next thing about a man. When a king visualizes, when he has ideals, when he has plans, and even in his subconscious, when he's busy dreaming, they're not plans to add on another room to his palace. They're not plans to plant a few more roses in the garden. And they're not plans about who he's going to have dinner to dinner next week. And they're not even plans about what time he's getting up tomorrow morning because he's got work to do. His plans and visions are all plans and visions of the whole community. He's working for the klal. His thoughts and his ambitions are all the ambitions of the populace and not his own personal ambitions. So that's the next thing you need about a king. His chalomos, his dreams have to be shel kol ha'olam kula. His dreams must be the dreams of all the world. He must have a vision for humanity, not just a vision for himself. And this really touches on the Tel Zerov's magnificent definition of Malchus. He says, Malchus is not a man who is afraid to leave his own country somewhere in Africa and go to the wedding in London, because when he gets back to Africa he might not have a throne. That's not a melech, says the Tel Zerov. That's an eved, that's a slave. That's somebody who's afraid of losing his job. What kind of a melech is afraid of losing his job? It's not a melech. A medic is not a man who has to have guards around his palace because he's afraid of assassination. That's not a medic, that's a prisoner. So it's a more romantic form of being in prison. But it's not Malchus. Malchus essentially is Yisroimimus HaNefesh. Says the Tells the Rog, the uplifting of the soul, the uplifting of the personality, to the point where it stands head and shoulders above everybody else, able to see clearly over the heads of everybody, to be able to create a vision for everybody, a vision not lit by the pressures of the society in which he operates, but a purely independently formed vision, that he has his own opinion, that he has his own method of doing things, he has his own way of analyzing. He has his own plans and his own direction, and he is not influenced by the tzibur. He'll listen to them, he'll take counsel with them, but his decisions, his visions, and his plans will not be the product of social pressure. They're going to be plans, visions, and ideals which are formulated by his own mind. That's what the melech is going to do. And that's really what it means here also, that he dreams for the whole people, standing head and shoulders above the people. And if that is the case, one has to understand the tremendous avodah that there is in becoming a melech. To be able to think independently of pressure, to be able to reach conclusions which are one's own, to be able to make decisions which are one's own, that's Malchus. And that tree needs tremendous greatness. Because some of the greatest pressures come from within. We're not even talking about pressures from without. Pressures from without are less than the pressures from within. And the first requirement of a melech, therefore, is to be able to make his own decisions in the pressures. His own physiological pressures. The pressures of his own yetzer hara. The pressures of his own desires, of his own preferences, of his own tendencies. To be able to strip himself free of all that and think clearly, to decide what's right and wrong, not what's nice and what's not nice, not what's pleasant and what's unpleasant, but to decide independently of one's feeling of pleasantness and unpleasantness, to decide what's right and what's wrong, what has to be done and what mustn't be done. That's the first step that a melech has to be able to take. And that requires tremendous. In fact, the Gemara says in the Dorit, that Lamed Beis, the end of the third period, Rami Bar Abba, Omer Rami Bar Abba, Ketiva says, Avram, or Ketiv Avraham. At what point and why was Avram's name changed from Avram to Avraham with the addition of the letter? Says Rami Bar Abba, "Bitchilo himlichu Hakadosh Baruch Hu." In the beginning, God crowned Avraham. He gave him a coronation. He declared him king. Al Mosayim va'Aboyim u'Shloisho, over 243, not people, Avorim, parts of his body. When Avraham was called Avraham, he was master over 243 parts of his body. And at the end, he was made master over the extra 248 parts of the body, which is the total sections into which the Torah divides the body. So Abraham was called Abraham when he was finally, and more important than that, we're able to understand why people really were identified. Because Malchus is not something which is excluded for kings, of which is preserved and reserved for kings of nations. Malchus is a state of being. Malchus is a midah, a characteristic. Malchus is something not only to which every individual can aspire, but something which every individual can and must reach. That stature of Malchus, that ability to walk around knowing that you don't have to worry about the pressures around you and the crowd. You're sitting in your little carriage being drawn by horses right through the crowds. You know where you're going. The feeling that one can make one's own decisions. the feeling that the people are looking to one for leadership rather than the other way around. The fact that one can analyze a question with clarity. That malchus is something which human beings noted in the royal family and craved for within themselves. They didn't identify because they think one day they'll be in Buckingham Palace, or that maybe one day they could be in Buckingham Palace, or what a pity they aren't in Buckingham Palace. That didn't cross anybody's mind. If you didn't know, it's not possible. The seeing of Malchus is something which was seen, noted, and identified with. People felt, everybody felt that they in themselves do have the capacity to be a melech. With or without followers, it doesn't matter. To be a melech, to be a king, each person felt they're able to do, they could do. And that's why they identified with it. And they're right. Malchus is something, king and a queen, is something which every individual can reach if he does it properly. And by the way, the way to do it, if you're not going to get in as an inhabitant of Buckingham Palace, the way to do it is to realize that you're not going to do it on your own. Amid all these pressures, you're not going to become independent just because you're very clever. The only way that you can become independent is to attach yourself to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's all. And to understand that the Torah becomes your guideline, and that's the basis of your analysis. And it's the Torah which will lead you through all the masses and through all the crowds. And it's through Torah, if one develops an honest relationship with Torah, if one develops a relationship with Torah free of negias, free of one's own petty little nonsenses, and one is prepared to subject oneself to what is right, in terms of the Torah, one will find very quickly that the Torah is leading you through all the clouds of confusion. But lastly, even if one doesn't manage to reach it oneself, there is still a chiyuv to assume that other people have reached it. The extent to which a Jew is meant to honor another Jew is unbelievable. The extent of the kavod. The din is that before you've davened in the morning, you shouldn't greet another individual. Depends on the circumstances. Firstly, the word shalom one should try and avoid using before davening altogether. Why? Because it's not nice to use the word shalom, which is one of God's names, in relationship to an individual before you've used it in relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Which is an amazing insight into the greeting shalom. Because that means after the davening you are in fact entitled to, and that's what you're doing. You're calling the man by one of God's names. You're giving him a name. You're saying shalom. Something you're not allowed to do before the davening. That's one aspect. The other aspect is, even if you don't use the word shalom, then it depends. If you happen to bump into this man, then you can greet him. You can say good morning in English, or tzatzatava in Hebrew, Aramaic. But you shouldn't, if you're going to him, you're going to his home, or you're just moving over, you're both in shul, and you go over to his place of davening to say good morning. That you shouldn't do before the davening. Why not? Because the Gemara uses very strong language. If you're bringing a sacrifice to a false god. Why? It says the altar of Slavotka, you act by greeting a person. The way a Jew has to greet a person is with such recognition to his malchus, to his royalty, that you're accepting upon yourself the royalty of another human being. You're acknowledging the royalty of another human being, the majesty of another human being, before you've done so to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that we're not allowed to do. It says, Altus Sabote, do you see here how you're meant to greet a person? Particularly when you're going over to him. If you just bump into him in the street, you say shalom and that's enough. But if you're going to somebody's home, and you stand there knocking at the door, you've got to know that halacha regards what you're about to do as being mamlich chavercha. You're actually enthroning your friend. You're bowing down before him. It's something you're not allowed to do before the davening because it's such an acknowledgement of royalty. That's how one knocks on another human being's door. That's how one rings his bell. That's why how one dials his telephone number. But to know that you're knocking at his door or dialing his telephone or ringing his bell as if you're standing outside Buckingham Palace. And when he opens the door, it appears that the Queen herself has opened the door. Didn't expect it. And the way one talks, and the way one says good morning, and the way one says I'm sorry for troubling you, is the way you would say it to the Queen. Whether one's knocking on the door, or ringing at the bell, or making a telephone call. We see from the halacha that there is such a prohibition about doing that before you've done it. Because it's considered so much being mamlich and throning your friend. The way we do it, it's not enthroning a friend. The way we do it, it's helping a friend usually. There's no objection to saying good morning the way we do it. It's such a routine sort of thing which we really don't mean. We certainly don't mean a good morning when we say good morning. And when we say how are you, we mean it even less. So there's no chashash, we have no fear of being over the dinim, of being mamlich somebody else when we say good morning. You don't have to worry. But it's not meant to be like that. It's meant to be that when you say good morning, you say good morning with such acknowledgement of the other human being's majesty, that it's not allowed to be done before that. And the reasons are twofold. Firstly, we think the Talmud Chochem, the Gemara in Gittin concludes, the Talmud Chochem has the din melech. The Talmud Chacham, you relate to the same as you relate to a melech. Why? Because the Talmud Chacham, by its very definition, is hopefully somebody who's ruling over himself. That's what it means to be a Talmud Chacham. And that's what the melech means. So you've got some kings who rule over millions of people, and some big kings who rule over thousands of people, and some kings who rule only over one person. And you remember a few weeks ago we had a king whose name was Shlomo, who at a certain time ruled only over his stick. But he was still a melech. Malchus is not how many people you rule over. And the reason for honoring Malchus is not because he controls a whole lot of people. The reason for acknowledging him is because of his own inherent greatness. That's something which a melech has naturally, and something which a Talmud Chacham should have, perhaps not so naturally, but at least developed. And not only do we have to relate to a Talmud Chacham as a king, in that same piece of Rambam that I was reading to you a little bit earlier, even the king has to relate to a Talmud Chacham like a king. After all this honor that we have to show the king, and we stand up and he sits down, and etc., etc., etc. Nevertheless, when it comes to Lomdei Torah, the king has to be mechabed them, he has to honor them. And when the Sanhedrin or the wise people of Israel come into the king's chamber, he should stand up. And he doesn't ask them to take a seat at the other side of his desk. He pulls chairs around to his side of the desk and he invites the Talmidei Chachamim to sit on his side of the desk. The Rambam goes on to say that only not in the presence of the public. When it's a public appearance, the king doesn't do all this with the Talmud Chacham. But we see, in essence, as great as the kavod is to a king, the kavod that the king has to show to a Talmud Chacham is still greater. So number one, if your friend happens to be a Talmud Chacham, there's no question that there's a certain way to relate to him. When Talmidei Chachamim come to your doors, as they do nowadays, whether it's to collect money, or to ask you for help, or whatever it is, if it's a genuine Talmud Chacham, and it's not terribly difficult to know whether it is or it isn't, there's a way to treat him. You treat him like you treat a king. No less. And you speak about him the way you speak about kings. No less. Makes no difference what his job is. Makes no difference if he's unfortunate enough to have to collect money for a living, or even if it's not for a living. No matter what it is. The man's a melech, the man's a king. Provided he's a man who rules over his own being. He's a man who is a mensch, he's a man who is a Talmud Chacham. But even if he's not, and even if he's not a Talmud Chacham, even if he's not an Orthodox Jew, even if he's just an ordinary person, after all, every human being is made b'tzelem elokim. Every human being carries the image of God. And if we got all excited and enthralled on Wednesday, because the whole deal had about it a little tiny bit of the Shekhinah, a little tiny bit of God's presence. So every human being has about him a little tiny bit of God's presence. Every human being has a bit of godliness in him, a bit of the Kedusha, a bit of the Shekhinah in him. How much more so if he's a fine human being? How much more so if he's a human being who's living a life which is a correct life to be lived? And how much more so still again if he's a Talmid Chacham that he has these dinim of it. And so we are mechuyev to not only honor our friends, but to treat them as malachim, to treat them as kings. One of the questions we ask when we come upstairs is Himlachta es Boyrecha? Were you mamlich the Ribbono Shel Olam? Did you declare him your king? Did you somehow feel yourself a servant of the Ribbono Shel Olam? That's one question we ask. The very next question is Himlachta Chavecha? Did you enthrone your friends as well? Did you crown your friends and feel that you were servants of their kingdom too? That's a feeling one has to have. No matter how great one might be oneself in relating to others, one has to have the feeling that one is in the presence of royalty. And lastly, you know, the British manufactured this thing which they call royalty. We found tonight that it's not a Hollywood production, it's something real. Something that's really there. Something which the Torah recognizes and gives tremendous chashivus to, tremendous importance to. Be that as it may, they could destroy it. They could destroy it tomorrow. They could just do away with it, tie it up, finish, sell the palace. Who would they be doing the greatest harm to? After watching a thing like Wednesday, who would suffer? The Queen, she would see, heave a sigh of relief to get out of it. The Duke of Edinburgh would be thrilled. Charles might feel he's missing out a little bit on something, but you'll have enough to look after yourself and to live happily ever after too. Who are the people who are going to suffer? Those millions of people who see it as some kind of romantic ideal, and they're able to identify. They're able to feel that Malchus is something that they too can strive for. If not inside Buckingham Palace, then inside their own palaces, their own homes. Each Englishman feels there's something in it for me, there's something I can get out of it. That entire richness would be robbed. They would be robbed of if they dismantled their monarchy. Imagine the richness that people could have if they enthroned their chaverim as well. Not only there was one queen, one king. If one queen can give such richness to so many hundreds of millions of people, how much more richness could individuals get if they regarded everybody they come into contact as being little kings and queens? How does it enrich their interpersonal relationships? How does it enrich their own feeling of Malchus? How does it enrich their relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam in understanding what Shekhinah is and feeling the Shekhinah every time they encounter a person? Seeing in people, even in not such good people, but deep inside them, there's something of godliness. Their intelligence, their ability to speak. There's something in inside every human being which contains a little bit of godliness. To relate to that and see it as the Shekhinah. How much richness there would be if when we spoke to people, we spoke to them as if we were speaking to kings and queens. If when we knocked on their door, we knocked as if we were knocking at the palace. If when we dialed their numbers, we dialed as though we were dialing the palace number. And in all our contact with people, we showed just a little bit of that excitement. And that feeling of being in the presence of something special and of some majesty that so many thousands of millions of people were able to show on Wednesday.